For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Well, this has been a crazy busy week when it comes to news, huh? Yeah, I mean, there's been no shortage of stuff to talk about. I mean, let's think about it. You've got the hearings in the U.S. Supreme Court over who is likely, probably, going to be the next U.S. Supreme Court justice. In the Missouri side of the listing area, you have the Eric Greitens saga continues and adds layers, and the shakeup of the U.S. Senate race. And, you know, that's always changing. Who knows? That could be a minute-to-minute news topic right there. On the Illinois side, you've got a new book that dropped, came out in detailing Mike Madigan's fall from grace. And, of course, as well on the international scale, you've got Russia continuing to attack Ukraine after this invasion that is however many weeks old now. I'm Mike Ferguson, just about 5:35. Appreciate you making News Talk STL part of your day today. We had a real good conversation with former Congressman Bob Barr, who's also a former federal prosecutor and a former intelligence analyst as well. So he's got a pretty well-rounded look at what's happening in Ukraine and Russia as it relates to international law. Now that the Biden administration has declared that Vladimir Putin is committing war crimes. I mean, what he's doing is evil, but is it a war crime by definition? And is that actually important? Not just hair splitting on terminology. What's it actually mean and how could it affect the United States? Here's what Bob had to say, and it's actually very educational. U.S. government officials now formally determined that Russia has committed actual war crimes from an official capacity. Fox's Grinnell Scott has a very quick snapshot of that.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken in a statement said indiscriminate attacks seen against civilians in Ukraine, including children, by Russian forces constitutes war crimes. Ambassador at Large for Global Criminal Justice Beth Van Schaak says in terms of liability,
ultimately it will be for a court of law to determine individual criminal responsibility, who is directly responsible for these particular cases.
Van Schaak says while there are documents that can implicate commanders-in-chief, only a court with jurisdiction could levy such a charge against Russian President Vladimir Putin. Grinnell Scott, Fox News.
Okay, so Bob, I'm going to tap into your not just congressional experience, not just your federal prosecutor experience, not just your intelligence analyst experience, but the fact that you've actually been involved in international law as well. When you hear that government officials from the U.S. say, okay, we are declaring these are war crimes, what's your reaction to that? Are they right, wrong, or other?
Well, it's probably other, Mike. Last week, President Biden, in an offhanded remark to a reporter, said, yes, Putin is a war criminal. And the next day, Secretary of State Antony Blinken at a news conference says, I personally think he's committed war crimes. You know, talk is cheap. Throwing around these terms that have serious significance in international law is very irresponsible. If, in fact, they can be shown through evidence that that Putin ordered or with deliberate indifference allowed actions to take place that deliberately targeted civilians, deliberately and intentionally targeted civilian buildings with no military use. Yes, and there are other atrocities, certainly, that fall under the definition of war crimes. But still, again, U.S. law would not apply. There is in our law, there is the crime of war crimes, but it applies only to U.S. citizens and only to acts in the U.S. It doesn't apply to a foreign leader, a foreign military official in a foreign country. So as I think the official just indicated, you would have to bring charges before an international tribunal that can actually obtain jurisdiction over and get the people in themselves who allegedly committed the war crimes into the custody of the court. And that's highly unlikely. So throwing around these terms is very easy, but ultimately it doesn't mean an awful lot.
Good morning, Bob. Gabe Pfeiffer here. To the layman, international courts are a little kind of mystifying. We understand our court system where, you know, it has police power that can execute its judgments. If there was anything to befall Russia in an international court, what sort of penalties could they assess and how would they be executed?
Well, for example, there is an international criminal court that was established formally, I think, back in 2002. The U.S. is not a party to it. Russia is not a party to it. China is not a party to it. India is not a party to it. But if, in fact, the International Criminal Court, which sits in The Hague, decided that they had enough evidence and could issue an indictment against a Russian officer or civilian official, they could bring charges, but they would not be able to execute on those charges until the person was physically in their custody. Now, they can get into their custody lawfully, or somebody could kidnap them and bring them in. They would have to have physical custody in order to try the person. If they tried the person and they found them guilty of war crimes, then I believe the maximum penalty is 30 years in prison, and those sentences are usually served in a different country where they have a secure facility.
And those charges can only be brought against individuals as opposed to nation states or even sub-organizations in those nation states.
I believe so. And if one looks back at the history of the Nuremberg trials, for example, in the immediate aftermath of World War II in Nuremberg, Germany, by the Allied powers, they tried, I think, about two dozen individual civilian and military Nazi officials. And then there were subsequent military tribunal trials pursuant to that in Japan, and individuals were tried, not governments. It's the individuals responsible for the atrocities or the crimes against humanity.
Bob, at the NATO meetings in Brussels today, what should President Biden be pushing for, and what should he watch out for? Not that I think he's going to necessarily do the right thing, but if you were advising the president, what would you hope that he would do at the NATO meetings over the next day or so?
Well, I would hope that he would do what a U.S. president should do, and that is actually lead, present a coherent plan as the most powerful force in NATO. What NATO needs to do is they need to have a clear plan for contingencies. If Russia does this, then NATO will do that. But NATO is not directly involved with Ukraine. Individual NATO countries, as we and Poland and Germany and others have been doing, can support Ukraine and can supply defensive weapons to them. But it would be a major step, and I think inconsistent with NATO's charter, for NATO to start sending warplanes, NATO warplanes, such as those in Poland over there, because those are offensive weapons. And once a NATO country starts taking offensive action against Russia, that is outside of our charter, and Russia could respond against NATO fairly forcefully, and I don't think that's something that we want.
And if Russia responds forcefully towards any NATO nation, what are our treaty obligations under that? Let's say that, you know, Russia lobs missiles at somebody. Are we committed through the treaty to get involved militarily?
We are, and I'm not an expert on the treaty, but my understanding of it is that yes, at that point, NATO would be obligated to respond, and the scope of that response would depend on the specific nations and the decision by the NATO military leaders.
Bob, just to follow up on something you said a little earlier, you're suggesting that the transfer of those jets would be considered an offensive action by NATO by treaty?
Using them. Okay. Using the... If NATO planes are used against a non-NATO country, against a country for taking action against a non-NATO country, then that would be outside of the charter.
So like a no-fly zone.
That's a more interesting question. I'm of the opinion that if a no-fly zone for humanitarian purposes only is carved out to provide for the humanitarian transfer of civilians from Ukraine into a NATO country, and that is established clearly as a no-fly zone. To me, that could be a proper use of the planes for a no-fly zone. But you have to be extremely careful and lay out very carefully the parameters of that no-fly zone, and not ensure that the planes are not used for offensive purposes.
That's an interesting perspective to keep in mind there. That's a good one there, Bob. All right, Bob Barr, you can find him at bobbarr.org, and you can also look up Liberty Guard as well, where they are looking at how conservative and just how constitutional are these candidates running for office, among other things. But bobbarr.org is where you find the updated blog and writing and commentary. And Bob, appreciate you being back on the program. Let's do it again in a few weeks.
Always a pleasure. Look forward to it, Mike.
Daily News Roundup starts in 4 minutes. Imagine this. Some lawmakers on the Missouri side say, you know what? Children should not be injected with hormones if they claim that they are transgender. And you know what? Even if the parents agree, they shouldn't be allowed to have surgery to do the so-called transitioning. Is that really too much to ask? I mean, the left wing around Missouri is really upset about this. I think the left wing is absolutely crazy about this. This is not too much big government. I'll tell you what is being said and get your reaction to that as well, right here on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
We've got some breaking news I'm going to tell you about here in just a minute involving St. Louis Police Department as well. We've got one officer hurt. I'll tell you what's going on here in just a moment. I'm Mike Ferguson. It is 5:50, and Ken Williams is here, of course. In the 7 o'clock hour, I mentioned this in the last segment, there is a law being proposed in Missouri that says that children, and we're talking children, minors, that it would become illegal to inject them with hormones, and it would be illegal to conduct a surgery on them if those children say, well, I'm transgender. I want to get this done now. Even if the parents are demented enough people to agree with it, the law says, no, you can't do that while they're minors. And the left is losing their ever-loving mind over this. It's just amazing to me that this is one of the things that we're like, we're going to stand and fight. And the media headlines over this the last day or so is like, trans youth stand up to Republicans over healthcare. So in the 7 o'clock hour, we'll go into more depth on that. But if that doesn't show you just how demented things are getting, that we have a disagreement over whether or not it should be legal to surgically alter a child's body.
Sorry, lefties, but the parents still have control over the children while they're minors. Sorry. Right.
Well,
not sorry.
And this would even so, even if you've got some sick person who's unfortunately a parent who agrees and says, well, Jimmy says he's a girl and he really wants to do this, so I sign off on it. The law says, no, you don't get to make that decision, parents.
God will deal with them later.
Well, yeah. And so, but that's what they're angry about. It's like, this is gender affirming health care. No, it's not. It's not. But all the law says, if you want to do this, become an adult first, then make your own decision on it.
Do you want to go over the numbers? We can go over the numbers about how many people who have committed suicide from making transitions. I mean, these things need to be talked out. They need to be thought about. The child. Mike, I don't have a tattoo on me, and I told myself, I designed one, and I said, I'm going to give myself 5 years to think about it.
Yeah.
And if at that 5-year mark I want to still do it, I will. And I didn't want to.
Right. Well,
I mean, that's a tattoo.
You've also got the 10-year plus John Hopkins study that shows that for the most part, kids who go through this dysphoria, they work it out.
Right.
But if you let your 14-year-old say, nope, I'm a girl, cut it off, there's no going back from that.
No.
But the idea that even the most pro trans LGBT extremist out there should have the moral fortitude to go, yeah, that's an adult decision. It's okay to say you got to wait till you're an adult to do that. Live your life however you want.
But you know how the left works.
Yeah.
They fight, and they will not give up even an inch because they know if they do, they feel like, anyway, that they're going to lose everything.
Yeah, and so this is more in the 7 o'clock hour, because I know there are people out there who disagree. And I truly am desperate to hear your perspective as to how you would be against a law like this. And this is coming from me, who says parental rights trump pretty much everything. So that conversation coming. Okay, the breaking news here. St. Louis police called to the 5400 block of Genevieve a little bit ago, just about a half an hour ago, for a domestic disturbance call. One police officer has been stabbed. It's reported to be not a major injury, but he's stabbed and he's taken to the hospital.
Do we know his name?
We don't. They're still on the scene right now. Second officer on the scene ended up shooting the subject. The suspect is conscious. He is breathing at last check. But basically what's happening is the police showed up and the guy in the domestic disturbance situation met them with a knife and it appears went after them. And so one officer, some degree of injury. It does not sound like it's severe, but he was stabbed, and so that's happening, and then the guy got shot as well. So more details will unfold probably through the midday in the afternoon on this.
Don't bring a knife to a gunfight.
Yeah, exactly. So the rest of the details will be coming up on that. All right. So let's see here. What else is going on here? Missouri State Senators finally agree on a new congressional map. This is a fight that's been going on for, what, 2-3 months now? Since January, we started off with a filibuster in a legislative session.
Yeah.
And essentially what they have come to is basically what we have right now. And the only difference is that Ann Wagner's district in the second district is shored up to make it more Republican. Unfortunately, I'm still in the first district where Cori Bush does not even come close to representing me. Although, to be fair, I live in a very hippy-dippy leftist area of Richmond Heights, and so they're fine with it. So really not a lot's going to change. 6-2 is what the map is likely going to keep Missouri for the next 10 years, most likely.
Yeah.
That's the best that you could do, I think, in Missouri. The conservatives wanted to make it so that there were 7 Republicans and 1 Democrat. That wasn't realistic politically. And to be fair, I don't think it represents Missouri properly. 6-2, I think, is what's most appropriate. And it's also just based on the numbers.
I know, but you know what I think about
it. I know. But
take
what you get.
It's a different political war now.
But really what's happened is this has ensured that every incumbent's going to get reelected. I mean, that's what it does. So the parties will pick the congressional representatives. The people, not so much. So parties are picking their constituents. The voters are not really picking, you know, their vote other than in the primary. So that's how that works. So basically, we're right back to where we started, just shored up those representatives a little bit more. Interesting tidbit on politics in Missouri. I've seen a number of Democrats, including a couple Democratic state representatives, putting out a plea. I mean, I'm talking yesterday. Putting out a plea because over 80 state representative seats in Missouri don't have a Democrat have even filed. Now, remember, the filing period ends in a week. And so they were desperately asking Democrats to sign up and run for state representative just to contest them. But you can't sign up this late and say, OK, fine, I'm running. And build a campaign and find the fundraising and find the volunteers and get all the signs and all that kind of stuff. So that tells you kind of where the status of the Democratic Party is in a lot of Missouri, including some of those seats are in St. Louis County, which is leans blue, which leans Democratic. So over 80 state representative seats will be uncontested by Democrats this year.
Wow.
Now, there's going to be some that are uncontested by Republicans in St. Louis City, in Kansas City, but nothing like that number.
No.
Whatsoever. Let's see here. In Washington, D.C., the hearings, the questioning of Ketanji Brown Jackson has ended. And the Republicans, Republican leader in the Senate, he says, when it comes to KBJ, I'm out.
I enjoyed meeting the nominee. I went into the Senate process with an open mind. But after studying the nominee's record and watching her performance this week, I cannot and will not support Judge Jackson for a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court.
All right. Is that going to change anything? Not really, because she is going to be confirmed in a few weeks. But what this does is it takes away cover for some of the senators who are going to say, oh, you know what, this is more bipartisan than we're seeing. And, you know, Susan Collins is still going to vote for her. Lisa Murkowski is going to vote for her. This takes away a little bit of cover for people like Mitt Romney. But the Democrats have the votes with a couple of Republicans, and Brown Jackson is going to be not confirmed.
I mean, that's just how it goes.
No, it'll be a protest vote.
Yeah, so, you know, but McConnell's out on it. All right, let's see here. Just ahead, what do we got? Oh, a volunteer commission about fitness and health in America is sending letters to two of its members saying, you need to quit. I'll tell you why President Biden's administration wants Herschel Walker and Dr. Oz off that volunteer commission that has no power whatsoever. That's a 605.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.